is Thursday, February 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea issues an angry response to South Korea's decision to close a jointly run industrial complex. We get reaction from Seoul.
I believe the government had no other choice but to move towards this very unpalatable but difficult option.
China's Christians face growing persecution, and singer Mariah Carey has a new fiancé. It's all ahead. North Korea said Thursday that South Korea's decision to suspend operations at the jointly run Kaesong Industrial Complex amounts to a declaration of war. Pyongyang responded to Seoul's decision to shut down operations at Kaesong by freezing its assets and expelling all South Koreans. The complex was opened in 2004 as a symbol of Korean reconciliation and has employed tens of thousands of North Koreans. James Kim, research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the suspension will cost the North about $100 million in annual lost revenue.
If you take a look overall at the general estimate of the North Korean economy, anywhere between $11 and $15 billion, it makes up a small portion, but you can't say that's a small sum for an economy that's not that big to begin with.
Obviously, it's intended to make sure that North Korea doesn't use that hard currency to advance its missile and nuclear programs.
But there's also a reason why that facility had stayed open. Largely, it was for improved inter-Korean relations and some hope in the long run that this kind of economic exchange would lead to warming of relations and possibly North Korea not taking the nuclearization path. But that clearly has failed, as we've seen over the past 10 years. And so I believe the government had no other choice but to move towards this very unpalatable but difficult option.
That's research fellow James Kim. It's the latest development following Sunday's provocative rocket launch by Pyongyang to replace a satellite in orbit, a move the world has condemned as an effort to develop an intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead. Wednesday, the U.S. Senate unanimously approved new sanctions aimed at the North's ability to finance such activities, banned under UN Security Council resolutions. Korea expert David Straub of Stanford University says if the legislation is signed into law, it is uncertain what impact it will have given the North's strong reaction to financial sanctions imposed by the Bush administration in 2008.
The Bush administration's measures were limited, and they came as a surprise. This time, the bill has been telegraphed for a long time. North Korea has had several years to find ways of hiding its financial activities internationally. Moreover, it appears that China is probably going to be more reluctant than it was in the past to go along with the United States financial sanctions against North Korea.
Is there a concern that the Obama administration's so-called policy of strategic patience has failed?
There are a lot of critics on both the left and right in the United States and even in places like South Korea who use the word failed for the Obama administration's policy. I myself have never used the word failed. The Obama administration's spokespeople have sometimes themselves used the phrase not succeeded, and I think that's a fair way of putting it. The North Korea problem is extremely difficult, and as other people have said, it's the land of no good options. I think it's kind of perverse for us to blame ourselves for something the North Koreans have caused. Moreover, I think that the Obama administration policy has been carefully calibrated given all of the parameters and the problems and the obstacles that we face in trying to make North Korea policy. In other words, it's far from perfect, but it's probably the best we could come up with at the time. But now the time has come for somewhat a tougher approach.
Well, the Senate's action, followed by the House, followed an annual assessment of global threats by the Director of National Intelligence. James Clapper, who said the North has expanded a uranium enrichment facility and restarted a plutonium reactor that could start recovering material for nuclear weapons. How concerning is this to you?
Well, both the North Korean nuclear program and long-range missile program are a concern. In fact, they're a related concern, as North Korea presumably will want to be eventually able to put nuclear warheads on long-range missiles, all the better to threaten the United States with it. That said, we've known for a long time that North Korea was going to go as fast as its resources would allow in developing these programs. This is not a particularly surprising development, and given that this is a mid- to long-term problem, that is, of dealing with North Korea, we still have time to deal with them.
And David Straub calls the closing of the Kaesong joint venture a dramatic and important development, ending the last vestige of the so-called sunshine policy of rapprochement with Pyongyang. He says it was a particularly difficult decision for President Park Geun-hye because of the economic cost to dozens of South Korean companies invested in the project. But he calls it necessary given Seoul's attempt to lead an international effort to punish the North for its actions. And now for a look at social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Andrew Palshevsky. Hi, Andrew.
Thanks for having me. Well, we start with Chipotle. This is the Mexican food establishment here in the U.S., fast food. They've actually one of the pioneering restaurants for the system of you can walk down the line and tell them what to put on your burrito or tacos or whatnot. But they had an issue with a number of restaurants being contaminated with E. coli and making a number of people sick. So they took an unusual move this week and shut down all their restaurants nationwide for one day so they could brief their staff on health steps that they're taking. And now what they've done is they're giving away coupons for free burritos in an effort to try to get people back into the restaurants. And, of course, social media is having a field day with this on a number of levels. On the one hand, you have people that are excited and are fans of Chipotle saying, all right, I'm going to get a free burrito. This is great. People sharing the link to where to get this coupon. But then you have a lot of other people on social media saying, wait a minute, isn't this the restaurant that just a couple months ago was making people sick and now they want us to come in and eat their food? There's a lot of skepticism on that end. But it's been a big topic of conversation because, of course, food is always a big topic of conversation on social media. We also have a story out of the UK's Guardian newspaper. A reporter there deleted the Facebook app from his phone and found that when he did that, and rather than using Facebook through the app, used it just through his web browser on his phone, actually saved 15% of his battery. So the suggestion that he has for people is delete your Facebook app. If you want to use Facebook, just use it through the mobile site rather than trying to use this app and end up wasting your battery. It was actually very interesting how he did it. He was very clinical and precise, would charge it for the same number of hours every night, would use Facebook roughly for the same amount of time. And sure enough, it's a big battery drainer. So if you're out there and your phone is consistently losing battery, then it may be a time to give Facebook on the web client a try rather than the app.
Yeah, some very good advice. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists have written a new analysis in the journal Nature Climate Change that examines the long-term impacts of carbon emission and climate change. Peter Clark, an Oregon State University paleoclimatologist, is the lead author of the article, and he says that the carbon being emitted into the atmosphere today will remain there for thousands of years.
How much climate change will occur as a result of an increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is not a short-term question, it's a long-term question.
Considering the long time scales of the carbon cycle and climate change, the analysis says that the target must be zero or even negative carbon emissions as soon as possible. Co-author Daniel Schrag from Harvard University says that a path toward total decarbonization means continuing to invest in innovation that can someday replace fossil fuels altogether, since partial reductions are not going to do the job. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, singer Mariah Carey has a new fiancé. A senior pastor at a church in Hangzhou, China, has been replaced and put under investigation for embezzlement, adding to fears of a growing crackdown on Christianity. Observers are speculating the replacement was due to his opposition to the relocation of church crosses or church demolitions in Zhejiang province. Shannon Van Sant files from Hong Kong.
Zhejiang province is home to at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Chinese Christians and is often referred to as China's Jerusalem. However, a spate of arrests over the last few months, combined with a long-running official campaign to remove hundreds of crosses and even demolish some churches, has raised concerns about religious freedom in the region. Late last month, police detained leading pastor Li Guangzhong and his wife. Their arrest followed the detention of Gu Yuexi and his wife. Gu was the senior pastor of the 10,000-member Chongyi Church, the largest government-approved Protestant church in China. Prior to his detention, China's state-approved religious groups, the Three Self-Patriotic Movement and the China Christian Council, forcibly removed Gu from his post, with authorities saying he is being investigated for corruption. A pastor in Hong Kong, who prefers to remain anonymous to protect his contacts on the mainland, says Gu's arrest surprised many throughout China's Christian community.
But, I met the man before. He seems to be very, honest and highly respected, very spiritual man. Very good man, had a lot of contacts with a lot of Christians throughout China, both house church Christians, of course, as well as the official church.
The arrests come against the backdrop of an ongoing campaign against Christian crosses in Zhejiang. Since 2013, the government has forcibly removed more than 1,500 crosses from churches, claiming they are too large and violate building codes. Gu was one of many church leaders who publicly opposed the destruction of the crosses. Bob Fu, president of China Aid, which provides legal counsel to Christians in China, believes Gu's arrest is retribution for his public protest.
Well, that's the revenge, basically, by using the criminal charges to punish those government-sanctioned pastors for their public opposition against the forced demolition.
Chinese authorities, who have not commented on the recent arrest, detained more than 250 lawyers, church leaders, and activists last year for opposing the cross demolitions. Church leaders say the crackdown followed years of relative religious freedom in Zhejiang, when Chinese authorities allowed Christianity to spread and flourish. Karsten Valla, an associate professor of political science at Loyola University, says the government appears to be taking a different tack in the region now.
The arrest of Joseph Gu has been linked to his opposition to this destruction of churches and removal of crosses. So, to put this into a larger perspective, it seems as though the Chinese Communist Party is trying to reduce the public visibility of Christianity in society.
China Aid is reporting another Zhejiang pastor, Huang Yizhu, was released from house arrest this week after spending 5 months in detention while under investigation for endangering national security. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Hong Kong.
30 of the world's leading scientific research organizations, journals, and donors have pledged to immediately share all data and expertise on the Zika virus for free. The viral disease carried by mosquitoes has raised international alarm after surfacing in Brazil and spreading rapidly through the Americas. Sanjana Senanayake, an associate professor in medicine and an expert on infectious diseases at the Australian National University, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the growing cooperation among the global medical community is a positive development.
These days, we're really a global community in terms of access to each other's information, access to each other's countries. And in many ways, that's how a lot of these infections can spread so easily, because we can see each other so quickly and travel so quickly from one place to another. But it's also important to maintain that sense of global collegiality when it comes to something like this. It will definitely help and enhance our understanding of Zika virus and what it can do to adults, children, and unborn babies alike. Because often, when there is a new outbreak, so an infection never seen before, scientists from different institutions, different countries are scrambling to be the first to get their publication out there. Not that they're not thinking about the greater good, but there's also that competitive streak that can sometimes hinder things a bit.
What do we know more about Zika, and is it still spreading mostly in Latin America?
Yes, it seems to still be spreading in Central and South America. In terms of what we're learning about it, there's now sexual transmission in the United States. We already knew that there was a possibility it could happen, but this latest case seems to further firm that possibility of sexual transmission. Having said that, we still don't know how significant it is in terms of transmission of Zika compared to the mosquito-borne cases. Given that we're talking about pregnant women and birth defects, obviously sexual transmission has to be thought about very carefully. And a group in Brazil who were looking at babies, I think 100,000 babies with congenital heart defects, one of the leading scientists in that research group decided to look at babies with microcephaly. And I think they found about 16,000 babies who'd had microcephaly over 4 years. And they did, in fact, find that predating the recognition of this big Zika outbreak in Brazil, there were large numbers of microcephaly cases. So this has raised the issue, well, is Zika the only thing responsible for the microcephaly outbreak? Is it possible that Zika was there 4 years ago and it wasn't just being recognized and it was causing the birth defects, or is something else going on?
And Sanjaya Senanayaka says there have been 3,000 women in Colombia diagnosed with Zika but gave birth to healthy babies with no trace of microcephaly. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. We have the latest musical news on Mariah Carey with International Edition host Susan Yockey.
Border Crossings' Larry London has joined me here in the studio with news from the music world. And today we're going to talk about super-duper star Mariah Carey, who, Larry tells me, everybody knows. Everybody knows that, Mariah.
There isn't a person on the planet other than you, Susan, who doesn't know Mariah Carey. 200 million albums sold. She is... without question, the ultimate diva in music. She's won 5 Grammys, 19 music awards. She was the artist of the millennium. She had number one hit in every year of the 90s. Only artist to do that. So, yeah, she's right up there with the creme de la creme.
So what's she up to now?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Uh-huh. There's some big news about Mariah Carey. It's not music news.
Oh.
I don't have music news today because Mariah hasn't had an album out for a little bit. You know, she put out an album in 2014, and that was her last new album, although I understand there's a plan for her to work on a new album sometime this year. But she's not in a rush because she's got a Las Vegas residency. She's performing regularly in a hotel casino in Las Vegas.
That's like, a good gig.
That's what everybody seems to be doing now. Jennifer Lopez, Celine Dion's been doing it for years, and so now Mariah's got her regular thing going on. But here's the news that's very exciting for Mariah Carey. She just got engaged.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, that's right, Susan. It's her third marriage. She was once married to Tommy Mottola, who ran Sony Music at the time, and that marriage lasted a few years. Then she married Nick Cannon. They have 2 children together, Monroe and Moroccan, and got divorced last year. And now Mariah has moved down and found new love with a billionaire whose name is James Packer.
And the ring?
Oh, of course, and the ring, the 35-carat diamond ring.
Woo, she can use that in her show to light the stage.
She does, as a matter of fact. It was a newspaper story in Las Vegas that the diamond ring stole the show and was distracting everybody.
Ooh, well, let's listen to one of her songs, Always Be My Baby.
Do-do-do, oh. Do-do-do-do-do-do. moment in time, innocent, everlasting, that you would always be mine. Now you wanna be free, so I let you fly, 'cause I know in my heart, babe,
well, thank you, Larry. It's always nice to have you stop by the studio.
Thank you, Susan. It's always a pleasure to be here in the studio.
I ain't gonna cry, no, and I won't beg you to stay. If you're determined to leave, boy, I will not stand in your way.
Well, congratulations to the newly engaged Mariah Carey. And that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If we are to be successful in our efforts to defeat and eventually eliminate violent terrorist groups, we must adopt a truly global approach in every sense of the word. This means that the community of nations must work together to address every major aspect of this scourge. Take ISIL, for example. Over the past 2 years, this group has managed to attract significant numbers of foreign terrorist fighters and inspired other like-minded violent extremist groups to align themselves with ISIL. It uses social media to spread its message, to radicalize and recruit individuals to violence. Its propaganda has also managed to inspire individuals or small groups to conduct violent attacks in numerous cities around the world. We are addressing this challenge head-on, said U.S. Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism, Tina Cadenell. But we are not doing so alone. Indeed, the United States is just one part of a coalition of 66 partners. With nearly 10,000 airstrikes, we are methodically taking their leadership off the battlefield, as well as going after their heavy weapons, oil tankers, training camps, bulk cash storage, and their infrastructure. At the same time, in cooperation with local ground forces, we have taken back 20 to 25% of the populated territory ISIL once held in Iraq and Syria. And in Iraq alone, ISIL has lost 40% of what it held at its peak in August 2014. But much that needs to be done has no military solutions, said Ambassador Cadenell. The community of nations must work together to deny terrorists reinforcements of foreign terrorist fighters. We must cut off their access to financing, disrupt and expose their messaging, and stabilize the vulnerable communities that have been liberated from ISIL control. And so an ever-increasing number of nations is closing security loopholes, identifying, arresting, and even prosecuting foreign fighters heading to join ISIL. Countries are sharing information and working together to identify triggers and prevent radicalization, recruitment, and mobilization of individuals into terrorist groups. The terrorism challenges we face continue to evolve at a rapid pace, said Ambassador Cadenell. We need to bring strong, capable, and diverse partners to the forefront and enlist their help in the mutually important endeavor of global counterterrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.